If you know the fish tank, then you also have to know our friends at Planet Protein.
That's right, Big Seth, and Planet Protein is back and better than ever. They're gearing up for the momentous release of their Chocolate Magic Protein Shake, now completely sugar-free and free of sugar alcohols.
But still the same great taste, Juice. And Planet Protein is locally manufactured right here in South Florida. And to top it off, the new Chocolate Magic 2-pound bags feature a wooden scoop and eco-conscious packaging to protect our beautiful oceans.
Hey, no doubt, Seth. In fact, they're so local that my man Anthony, the COO of Planet Protein, is here to tell you why their product is not just good, but good for you.
That's right. Thanks for having me. Had to come down and tell it like it is. We produce Chocolate Magic right here in South Florida with our community in mind on the inside and outside of the bag. Eco-conscious materials, only 8 real ingredients, 4 of which are superfoods, put you in the prime position to conquer your day.
So if you're ready to live a clean and ethical nutritional lifestyle, then visit planetprotein.com now. And remember to use the code FISHTANK to receive 20% off all of your Planet Protein purchases.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at planet_protein.
Bam!
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to season 2 of the Fish Tank. Here, Seth Levitt on the 5 Reasons Sports Network, joined by who else? OJ McDuffie. Juice, how we doing, man?
What's up, Big Seth?
I'm doing great, Juice. You know, we dodged this guy long enough, but it's season 2.
Whoa. This is your second year?
This is season 2.
This is the first time I'm on here? What kind of bullshit is that? What the hell? I live right around the corner. You can't invite me over here earlier than that?
He fucking walked
over
here.
You've gone through everybody, right? You've gone through the whole list of guys.
He had a busy season. We're waiting for him to, you know, schedule it.
We haven't been able to get Jimmy Carr Wash on yet.
The bottom of the barrel of the fish tank there. You know, you're scraping the shit off the bottom, and I floated up.
It's exactly where we like it too. It's exactly where we like it. So if you heard that voice and you're a Dolphins fan, you clearly know who it was. Kim Bocamper is in the tank.
Yeah,
how we doing, Bo?
Good. It's great to be here. It's always, you know, great to see you, Seth and OJ. Always a pleasure when I get the chance to be with you. So it couldn't be any better. And look, before we start this, if you'll give me a moment here,
roll
you know,
with it.
I've got to say this to you, Seth, and I thought about this a lot over the years.
No, it's not.
No, you work with Jason Taylor for a long time. You know, you work with the Dolphins, and you left to work with Jason Taylor. Jason gets in the Hall of Fame, and look, Jason was going to get in the Hall of Fame one way or another. But I really applaud the way you've kind of worked with Jason during his career to get him out in the community and to help him be the kind of guy that he wanted to be and help him to get into the Hall of Fame. And like I said, you know, he was going to get there one way or another, but I think it certainly was an easier path with you leading the win. So I just wanted to give you a little props on that because I've watched you when you were with the Dolphins and when you transitioned over to Jason.
Wasn't worth the shit back then, was it?
No, you were pretty crappy back then. But you kind of watch how you two guys grew together and worked together. And I kind of consider you a team. And so I just want to give you, and Jason gets all the, you know, he gets all the headlines and gets all the credit, but kind of the guy behind the scenes. And I just want to throw that credit.
It means a lot. Yeah. I really do appreciate it. Preach, hopefully we can get that clip. I'll send it to Jason. For a raise.
No, JT, what do you mean, man? I made it to the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Hey, slow down,
JT. I'll take
JT.
A little credit.
I know how you got
there.
Somebody
start working on my bust up in here. No, very, very kind words, and I do appreciate it.
Truth, though. That's true.
Yeah, and it makes it a little harder to ask this next question. But
all right.
Way to butter me up. So we too funny. So, you know, Juice, everybody knows Kim Bocamper one way or another. You eat at his restaurant. Maybe you bought a car from him back in the day.
Yeah.
You certainly hear him, whether he's, you know, the Audible, the great podcast that they do with the Dolphins, all, you know, CBS4, or you cheered for him when he had an amazing career with the Miami Dolphins. But before we get into any of that, I want to talk about Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
That's what I want to get into because, you know, I want to talk about Ace Ventura, and I want to know, did you, like, sign up to be the shower guy? Was there a list? And you say, I want to be the mailbox guy.
No, you had no choice. You had no choice. You know, I it's funny because I got a call from Danny, and he says, you know, Danny, hey, Bo, what's up? Yeah, no, what's up? He goes, hey, I'm doing a movie. You want to be in it? You know? And I'm like, well, tell me what the movie's about. He goes, I don't know what it's about. You know, a guy's a pet detective, and they lost the Super Bowl ring. And I don't know, whatever. You want to be in it? And I'm thinking, what kind of pet guy? Pet detective.
Pet detective.
Super Bowl ring loss. I go, no one's going to watch this fucking movie. I'll be in it. I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. So I did it, and then I get a call from whoever was in charge of it, and and they said, here's what we you need to be at the Orange Bowl for this day, and here's what you're going to do. You're going to be – I was going to be Jeff Ulenake. Right,
and that, was he at the urinal?
Jeff Ulenake was the guy at the urinal. He looks over at Dave, you know, and then he kind of gets that little swishy walk in. And I'm like, so when I saw the movie, I go, thank God I wasn't that guy. Thank God I wasn't that guy because I don't want to live with that.
So you were able to pull a little rank.
No. You know what? It was because at the time I had bought a business. I was running I had an Interstate battery distributorship, and so it was a small business, and I was running and I was doing everything by my day to day by myself, and so I really was limited at when I could get out. So it was I said, look, I can't do it that day, but I can do it 2 days later. Like, I can't do it on Tuesday, but I'll do it on Thursday.
And the pisser was on Tuesday.
That was on Tuesday, right. So they put Jeff Ulenake in there, and then I went in and did the shower scene with Jim Carrey, and it was really a great experience because Jim Carrey at the time this was his first movie, and he had made his name in Living Color
sure.
with the Wayans brothers,
You're
which
right.
was a great comedy sketch comedy show, and really showed his talent off. So he got that, and so I showed up at the Orange Bowl, and as soon as I got there, he came over and introduced himself to me, walked all around the set, and he was showing me everything and all this and that, and it couldn't have been nicer. And he was on. Everyone goes, well, what was he like? He was like Jim Carrey that you see. He always had that little goofiness to him, and always. And he was a fun guy to work with, and he was very, very nice to me. And so it came out, and I got to meet Courtney Cox mm-hmm. when she was, you know, just getting started. And I forget the other lady that was in it, the one that was the detective or whatever.
Einhorn is Finkel.
So I got to meet her. Spoiler alert. Young, who was pretty hot at the time.
If you haven't seen it yet, spoiler alert.
I haven't seen her lately, but back then she was pretty hot.
Right.
You know? Right. So it's good. So everyone says, well, what was it like doing the show? I said, well, you know, it was like getting a tattoo. It took 4 hours, and I'll never get rid of it.
Right.
You know, it'll always be with me because every time it comes on,
yeah.
You know, it comes on in cycles.
Right.
Every time it comes on, I get text, hey, I saw you in the shower. And
right. Hey, do you get that SAG check still, though?
No. I opted for the one-time
payment. One-time payment?
Wow. They say we can pay you like $100 to do the shoot. And then we'll give you residuals. I go, no one's going to see. I go, what do you pay me if just on a one time? They said, we'll give you $500. I said, give me the $500. Yeah. So I took the $500.
Another great Kim Boker investment right there.
Ran to the bank with that, you know. So
I think a lot of people probably lost a great opportunity there because who the hell?
Well, you just thought it was. You're really the whole premise of the show is so stupid.
Yeah.
That you're like, no one's going to watch this thing. But Jim Carrey just really carried it on his shoulder and really made that movie. Although much like Danny, you know, like Danny would say he made Jim Carrey a star, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the other way. And he made the movie. And it was a lot of fun. And I'll never forget the first time it aired on TV. I was laying in bed with my wife, we're watching TV. We didn't know it was on, and someone calls and says, hey Kim, can I talk to Colleen? I go, yeah. So I give the phone to her. She goes, it's for you. And she goes, what? What? And she picks up and she goes, someone just told me they saw you naked in the shower. and that was the first call I got from that and my next door neighbor who saw it at the movie theater. And he was probably about 8 years old at the time. My next door, my kid that lived next door to me, Mikey Donovan.
Good old Mikey.
So I'm driving in my neighborhood, and Mikey's down the street on his bike, and he turns around. I see him turn around and start pedaling as fast as he can to catch up with me. So I drive into my driveway, and he comes and lays the bike down its side, you know, skids in there.
Straight Goonie style.
Jumps up, and I open the door, and he goes, hey, I just saw you in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. I go, what'd you think? He goes, I think you got a hairy back. So those were my first responses. Those are my first audience responses from Ace Ventura.
Great critical analysis from Mikey Donovan. I like that.
He went right to the heart of it. You know?
Yeah. And I think you told me a story one time that you were somewhere and someone came running up, Mr. Bocamp, and you thought, here it is, another Dolphins fan.
I was actually in Washington, D.C. They were having a golf tournament for Desert Storm. This is how far it goes back. You know, Desert Storm when they invaded Iraq, wherever it was out there. And so I'm there, and I'm at the driving range, and you know, hitting balls, warming up balls, you know, to go play in the golf tournament. And there's two kids standing behind me. And, oh, yeah, it's Kim Bocamper. And I'm going, hey, Kim, what the hell knows me? You know?
Up here, right?
I'm in Washington, D.C. And they go, yeah, geez, you think he'll sign our autograph? And I'm hitting ball. Now I'm starting to puff out a little bit, you know, hitting the ball a little harder, you know. So I get done, and they go, hey, Mr. Bocamper. Will you sign an autograph for us? I said, yeah, I'd be happy. You Dolphin fans? They go, what? And I go, you Dolphins? I go, no, no. I go, well, how do you know me? I go, we saw you in Ace Ventura. So that was it, you know?
That's awesome. That is awesome.
I remember when Jim Carrey came, I was at my rookie year and they were shooting that film.
Was that?
And he came in and did like a whole bunch of his sketches in the locker room, man. Fire Marshal Bill and all those great sketches he's talking about. That were so much fun, man. He was very inviting, man, and just a cool cat, man. Yeah. I showed the picture the other day when I had a whole head of hair and everything, man, with him.
I remember
he's a tall guy. He's really.
Yeah.
I thought, when I looked at he's probably about 6'2", maybe. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was towering. Well, I'm not that tall, but I guess you know what I mean?
Yeah, but just, he couldn't have made it more pleasant for me. You know, I walked away going, man, what a good dude. You know?
Yeah, I mean, your first nude scene.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't nude. They actually put on a pair of like skin tone, like little tights you put on. And back then, I wasn't that far removed from my playing career. Plus, I had a battery, so I'm hoisting back. So I was in pretty good shape. And so the water's cold. We're in the Orange Bowl, doing the thing. And Courtney Cox and the other one, all the girls are standing in there watching.
Oh, they're all in there
for the
scene.
They're all in there watching.
They want to see the guy with the shirt on.
Yeah. And so, so that was a little, and the water was cold, so I had a little George Costanza going on, so I wasn't feeling so robust about myself at that moment, you know. But
that's great.
Well, you did great work, Ken. Yeah. You really did.
That was my best acting today.
Well, let's go back a little bit to back 1976. Yeah. And before we talk about you being one of the first two, we had two first round draft picks. Let's talk about the All-Star game you've told me about. Yeah. You played against the previous Super Bowl champs. Yeah. Talk about that game and how it went down for you guys in the All-American.
You know, back in the day, and it happened to be the last one, they used to play the College All-Star game. And the College All-Star game was owned by the Chicago Tribune. Chicago Tribune made a deal with the NFL way back that if you were chosen to play in the College All-Star game, you had to play in the game or you couldn't go to training camp. It was one or the other. And that's the deal that the NFL
made. You can't pull that off anymore, huh?
You know, it's funny because, my college career was a little different than the norm. You know, I didn't get recruited out of high school. I went to an NIAI school in Minnesota my freshman year, 1,200 students, less than my high school. It was too cold for me in Minnesota. I'm a California guy. So I my mother passed away that year. So I left.
Oh, man.
Came back home and to kind of be closer to my dad and get away from the cold. And I didn't like it there. Went to junior college. Didn't get recruited out of junior college. End up going to San Jose State, which was down the street. And I was like the last guy that they signed. And then went on. And then 2 years later, I'm a first-round draft pick with the Dolphins.
Unbelievable.
Right? But after my senior year, before my last game my senior year, they called me to the football office. There was no cell phones or anything like that. So someone comes around, hey, Cam, go up to the football office. So I go and they go, hey, you got an invitation to play in the blue-gray game. I go, wow, I got to play in an all-star game. I said, yeah, I'm in, you know. And it turns out the blue-gray game wasn't quite the, it was, everyone goes, why'd you play in that game? You know, I go, right. Well, because it was the first one that asked me.
Somebody asked.
So then I played, then I got invited to the East-West Shrine game, and then I got invited to the Senior Bowl. So I played in three All-Star games after my senior season. And then I got drafted, and the way the College All-Star game worked at the time, they took the first two players drafted at each position, and that's how they made the team. And then they filled it out with some other guys. Like some guys, if you hadn't signed your contract, you couldn't go. And so they filled it out with some other guys. But the deal is you had to go there for 3 weeks. We were there for 3 weeks. I missed the first 2 weeks.
3 weeks.
I missed the first 2 weeks of my first NFL training camp. It was me, Duriel Harris, who was our second-round pick, and Larry Gordon, from Arizona State, was a linebacker from Arizona State, and just an awesome player.
Right.
And he was the 17th pick. I believe I was the 19th pick.
Go.
And so their top three picks in the draft
weren't even there.
Were gone for the first 3 weeks of first 2 weeks of training camp, which didn't sit well with Coach Shula when you came back. You know that, right? So it was one of those things. But so you go there, and it just so happened the College All-Stars played against the defending Super Bowl champions. So we played against the 1976 Pittsburgh Steelers.
That's craziness.
Terry Bradshaw. Franco Harris, Mike Webster. I mean, you go on. Donnie Shell, Jack Lambert, Jack. When the Pittsburghs at that time, the Pittsburgh Steelers were at the prime.
Right,
they were of Patriots, their dynasty.
Yes, the 70s.
They were a dynastic football team. And our head coach had retired from college football a couple years earlier. And he was our coach. It was Ara Parseghian, the great Notre Dame head coach.
Wow.
And we practiced for 3 weeks and never put pads on. And so we were getting paid like $400 a week. And for all of us, that was a lot of money.
Yes,
you know? And so we're in Chicago. We stayed in Evanston, Illinois. We practiced at Northwestern, but we were close to Chicago. So we would practice, and we would just practice in shorts, and, you know, it was like vacation. I went there in pretty good shape. I left in not such good shape because we would go out and practice in no pads. And then there was one guy named Ken Jones. He was a first-round pick of the Buffalo Bills out of Arkansas State. He had bought a brand-new pickup truck, and he drove it there, and he was going to drive to training camp from there, from Chicago. So we would go practice. We would come back. We would all gather in one of the offensive linemen's room, a bunch of us. We had gathered there because, if you know offensive linemen, they're disgusting, they're dirty, and they've got a lot of porn laying around their room, right? At least back in the day.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to cast any aspersions on today's guys.
I'm guessing a lot hasn't changed.
So we'd all jam into this guy's room after practice and watch the Gong Show. The Gong Show had just came out. I don't know if anyone remembers the Gong Show.
Yeah.
So we'd sit there and watch the Gong Show, like 20 guys in there.
The first talent show.
Oh, that guy's an idiot. Or, you know, so and then later that evening, we would jump into Kenny Jones's truck, pile in the back of the pickup, and drive to Chicago and go to Rush Street, where all the bars were. And we'd be there. All of us had money in our pocket, right? So we come back hungover, and we'd practice again and practice. And then we lined up, and then we got to the game. In Aeropar season, after every practice, you know, he'd try to give you one of those Notre Dame pep talks. You know, he'd take it down real low, and bring it up. And then he'd go, okay, let's go get him. And everyone go, yeah, whatever, you know, kind of wander back. But anyway, so we played the Pittsburgh Steelers. It had been raining all day in Chicago. I mean, raining, torrential downpour. Soldier Field was an artificial turf at the time, and they had dugout benches. They were deep. You had to step down to them to sit on the bench. They were completely filled with water because it rained. There were about an inch and a half of water standing on everywhere in the field. And I'd never been in a game then or since where when you're on the sideline and you looked out on the field, you couldn't see the players. You could see shadows, because it was raining so hard. So not only did we not make it past midfield against that Pittsburgh Steelers. Meanwhile, they're pissed.
Yeah, that's the last thing they want to do.
No, no. I'll tell you why they're pissed, because it was the first preseason game, and it was before the Hall of Fame game. So they had to come into training camp a week early for this game, which didn't make them happy.
Right.
So they were going to
take it out on you guys.
They were going to take it out. And sure. They did. So not only did we not make it past the 50-yard line, I don't think we made it past our own 40-yard line. The third quarter, lightning hits the stands, and there were a bunch of flagpoles on the end of Wrigley Field. Hits one of the light poles. The whole end section empties out onto the field.
Holy shit.
The referee's supposed to get in the locker room, push everyone in the locker rooms because fans are flooding on the field. And they said, we'll get the field cleared off and then we'll restart the game. We sat in there for an hour and a half. They came in and said, game's over.
Yeah.
Game's over. They canceled it. We didn't finish the game. Played halfway through the third quarter. And then that was the last game. Last time they ever played the game. Because they had to insure all the players.
Right.
And contracts were starting to get to the point where insurance became way too expensive. Right. So they just decided that it wasn't best. But one of the funniest things that happened, the Raiders didn't have a first-round pick that year. They had a second-round pick. And I had never seen this guy. I saw him the first time in the Senior Bowl. I never saw him in another college All-Star game. They drafted a kid in the second round, which was their first pick, from, I want to say, one of those, like Louisiana Tech, Louisiana State, one of those schools. This was the biggest man I'd ever seen in my life. He was 6'10", weighed about 320, and he was ripped. And on the first time I saw him, he was wearing a green and white checkered suit with a green and white derby on his head. Guy's 6'10". I'm going, who the hell is that guy? His name is Charles Filia.
I got to look him
up. Right. So the Raiders drafted him with their first pick of the draft, and it was their second-round pick. So he comes to the college All-Star game. And as typical in a football practice, before practice, you know, we'd kind of go out and sit there and sit around the dummies and hang out and watch. And the offensive line coach would always come up. Hey, come on, you guys. We need to get some extra. You know, the offensive line coaches. Come on, we need to get some extra work. So he's got his offensive line there, and we're all sitting up in the stands and sitting on the dummies going, oh, look at those guys having to practice. So the offensive line, and all of a sudden here comes Al Davis walking out, right, to start watching practice. So the offensive line goes, hey, I need a defensive player. Hey, one of you defensive guys, come on over here. And we're all kind of looking, hey, I ain't coming over there, you know. And so Al Davis goes, get my guy. Hey, Charles, come on over here, Charles. So Charles, you know, Charles is in, let me put it here, he wasn't the brightest bulb in the tree, right? So Charles comes, and he's like, why do I got it? He's, you know, bitching and moaning. Why do I got it? So he just slaps his helmet on, doesn't snap the chin strap. right? And just goes in there, and all of a sudden, someone on his offensive line comes up and hits him right in the chin,
oh,
right?
Damn.
And now he starts screaming. and he rips his helmet off, throws it on the ground. The helmet bounces up and hits Al Davis right in the mouth.
Come on.
And we're sitting there watching. Here's the first pick we take in the draft. Throws his helmet down, almost chips his tooth, gives him a bloody lip, and we're sitting there just howling. And it was that kind of thing.
He hadn't even made it to Dolphins game.
Right, right. So as going forward with Charles Field, I had a friend of mine played for the Raiders, and I called him about the first week of training. Hey, how things going? I go, how about your guy Charles Field? I said, that's the biggest guy I've ever seen. He goes, he ain't gonna be. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, let me put it to you this way: the first 3 days of training camp, he was a defensive lineman. First three days of training camp, he was in the offensive meeting room instead of the defensive meeting room, and someone told him one of the offensive coaches went in the defense room and said, hey, coach, you need to come get your guy, Filia. He doesn't even know where he's going. He's sitting in the offense meeting.
Didn't realize he was in the wrong room?
You know what the coach said? Leave him there.
You can keep him.
Keep this motherfucker.
Oh, man. Great pick, Al.
Hey, so you've been drafted already. Yeah. So how about your first time? Where were you when you got drafted? How'd you get the message? And then once you got to finally got to training camp?
Well, it was 76. There was ESPN wasn't in existence. It wasn't there, and so my year was a little different because they were trying to abolish the draft. You know, Kurt Flood had done the thing with baseball not long ago they're trying to make it where you could go wherever you wanted to go. You know, it's not right where if you get picked by a team that you have to go there. Kurt Flood did it with baseball. That's what created the free agency system in baseball. So football was trying to do away with the draft, so figure everyone could just go and sign with whatever team they wanted to sign with. So they canceled the draft when it normally was in April, and we never knew when it was going to be. It's going to be there. All right, we don't know. And so it was like the draft came somewhere in May, and it was one of those things where it says all of a sudden on Tuesday you get a phone call. Hey, this is so and so from the NFL office. The draft's going to be on Thursday, 2 days later. Okay. And so
it's only your life.
Exactly.
You imagine they had a million people in Nashville this year.
And so there's nothing on TV. There's nothing on radio. You don't know. So draft day comes around. You don't know if they're in the first pick or the 50th pick or the first round or the fifth round. And 17 rounds back in the day too.
Damn.
Right?
Holy shit.
So I'm every team called you a couple days before. I need a phone number where to contact you. Okay, here's my phone number. And I was living with my brother and my sister-in-law at the time in their apartment. So we're sitting there, you know, just sitting there waiting. The phone rings. I pick it up. I go in the back of the bedroom, my bedroom, and pick up the phone. And guy says, this is Kim Bokamp. I go, yes. He goes, well, this is Paul Brown, the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals. I want you to know that we just drafted you with our first pick in the NFL draft. He goes, how do you feel about being a member of the Cincinnati Bengals? And I go, well, Mr. Brown, I go, geez, man, I thank you very much for believing in me. And I'm ecstatic about being a member of the Cincinnati Bengals. And he goes, fuck you. And I go, what? And it's one of my buddies making a prank phone call, which to this day has got to be the greatest prank of all time, right? Because now I'm like, you asshole, you son of a bitch, you know?
And
I hang up the phone. And to this day, when I go home, so this guy's still a close friend of mine, and we've had a card game going back in San Jose for about 25 years now. Every Friday, they play at someone's house. So when I go home, like if we go out to play the Raiders or the 49, you go 2 days before, I'll go down to San Jose and go get back
playing
in the card game.
Right, right.
And at some point in there, someone goes, man, I'm ecstatic about this hand. it just keeps living.
It doesn't end.
So finally,
that's
I hang
horrible,
up the phone.
Man.
I go out and tell my brother, and he goes, oh, that asshole. He goes, he's not allowed in his house again. So about 15 minutes later, the phone rings again. I pick it up, and is this Kim Bokamper? I'm like, yes, it is. And I forget what the lady's name at the time was. It was Coach Shula's secretary before Ann. And she goes, oh, this is, I think her name was Lynn. This is Lynn, Coach Shula's secretary. I go, can you say that again, please? I'm trying to listen for a voice if I remember.
I'm glad you didn't go, fuck you.
And she goes, yeah, this is Lynn, Coach Shula's secretary. Coach Shula would like to talk to you. And I'm like, okay. And then as soon as I heard his voice, I knew, hey, look, we just picked you with our second pick in the first round. And and he didn't ask me how I felt being a member of the team. He said, you know, we got mini camp starts Friday. or Saturday, you need to be here, and you better be ready for the 12-minute run. And I'm going, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll be there. I'll be there. So that was my draft day experience.
Oh, okay. Thank God you didn't slide out of the first round. You'd really be pissed. That guy probably wouldn't be your friend any longer. Yeah. If you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle, AutoNation is where you want to go. They are the largest auto retailer from coast to coast.
And their friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on huge selections of new cars, trucks, SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much more.
Yeah, Juice, but if you're like me and you're looking to buy pre-owned, you know, I got 186,000 miles on the Toyota right now. But if you're looking to buy pre-owned, you can shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-price pre-owned vehicles. They are all clearly marked with one price, their lowest price guaranteed.
Yeah, or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn into cash today, get top dollar offer and a check the same day, they'll buy your car with no purchase necessary.
And if your check engine light is on, I got that going on as well. Right now, get the services you need at low AutoNation prices. Oil changes, tires, batteries, and more. All for less.
Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today.
And if you are in the market for a new car, DM us at TheFishTank81 on Twitter. Hopefully you're already following us at TheFishTank81 on Twitter, and we will get your information to an AutoNation senior manager so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process.
And you know, right then, it was like they were just coming off the perfect season a few years before that, so there was a lot of guys still part of that.
And you know what, I really consider myself very fortunate for the time that I joined this team, because you know I was young. I was a September birthday, so I started school early, so I was always kind of the younger guy in whatever class I was, so I was still kind of young in football terms. And you know, I walked in that locker room, and there's Bob Greasy, and there's Larry Little, and Wayne Moore, and you know, Nick Bonacani, and Jake Scott, and Dick Anderson, and you know, all those guys on that. The vast majority of guys on that 17-0 team were still there. They were, you know, they were kind of towards the end of their career. So I had the chance to spend 2 years really with a lot of those guys and became friends with them and teammates, and just to kind of, you know, kind of be on the outskirts with them of that 17-0 thing. And it's funny because there's a lot of people that I meet people and they go, yeah, Kim Bokamper, 17-0. And I've gotten to a point where I don't even argue it anymore. I just say, yeah, great, you know, whatever.
I didn't wear my ring today.
But no, I'm going, yeah. And so I remember when I was doing pregame show for the Dolphins, we're doing a pregame show out in front of the stadium. We do it out, you know, and so we had a little tent over us and we're doing the pregame show. And a guy comes up to me one day during a break and he says, Mr. Bokamper, will you sign my football? So yeah, I'd be glad to. He goes, it's my 17-0 football. And I got every member of the 17-0 team on here except for you. And I go, well, whoa, no. I go, I didn't play on that team. He goes, yes, you did. And I go, no, I think I would know if I did. I didn't play on that team. He goes, yes, you did. I go, and now we're having an argument. I go, no, look, pal, I didn't play on that team. And he goes, you just don't want to sign my ball.
Oh,
and I go, no, that's not true. I go, you've got a valuable ball there. I go, I'm not going to sign it. He goes, oh, you're going to be an asshole and you're not going to sign my ball.
Come on.
I said, well, give me the ball. I give him, I sign. I go, now it ain't worth shit. I go, here, you know, take it. And so, you know, I've kind of got by osmosis, I've kind of gotten tied to that team, but I've also made a lot of friends in that team. And I've had the opportunity over the years to MC events for them. Mad Dog used to do it a lot. Then we lost Mad Dog. Then they kind of came to me and said, hey, because I was doing radio and TV, and said, hey, can you? So I've MC'd a lot of events for those guys. That's awesome. They've always made me feel very welcome being a part of it. So that's been really, to me, one of the joys of coming to the Dolphins when I did. And, you know, I tell people, I said, you know, and I've done told stories about Bob Greasy in different situations he's there. And I always ended up with, you know, the one thing I know is that the one thing I never thought in my life was that I'd be able to stand up here and say, Bob Greasy's my friend. And those things are, you know, though, to me, those things are, you know, Larry Little, Bob Greasy, Kuchenberg, Langer, all those guys, for me be able to look back. Because I remember in 1972 when I was in high school, we were playing a poker game, and I'm sitting there, it was Christmas Day, that's how bad our group was, playing poker, Christmas evening, playing poker, watching the Dolphins and the Kansas City Chiefs play the longest game.
Oh, wow.
And I became a Dolphin fan because I liked their uniforms. They won, Zonka and those whole guys. So 4 years later, I'm walking in that locker room.
That's incredible.
And I'm like, wow. And here I am. And now for me to be able to say, look in my phone, and I got all their names in my phone number, and to say they're my friends is really one of the things I cherish most about being a member of this Dolphin family.
Everybody talks about it on this show. Is those relationships are the things you can't replace. But that's a unique group of guys.
Very unique. Very unique.
That is interesting. Yeah. So one of those guys, and you just mentioned him. That you know, when I look at that list, is Kuchenberg.
Yeah.
And Bob, you know, no longer with us, but yeah. Bob was an interesting guy to say the least in a lot of different ways. What was that like? So you know, you're playing on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to go up against Bob?
Yeah.
Was your relationship on the field, off the field?
Yeah,
what was that
we
like?
Used to do a lot of things. You know, we used to we were a 3-4 defense, and when I first started, I was outside linebacker. I started as a stand-up outside line. Never, you know, I was going to get drafted in the NFL as a linebacker, as a defensive end, or a tight end. Going into the first round, there I was like a third.
Did you play any tight end in college?
I played tight end at junior college.
Oh, okay.
I played tight end in high school.
Got
so
it.
I had it was on tape, you know. And so you know, I didn't know what I was going to. So anyway, so I come here, and I'm coming back from the All-Star game. And I come out in the field. I'm literally there on the field, and I'm getting dressed. And I come out in the field, and Bill Arnsberger was the defensive coordinator. And I had never played linebacker in my life. Never.
So you were a hand in the dirt guy.
I was a hand in the dirt guy. And then I played tight end when I was a junior in college or a sophomore in college. So I come in, and he goes, "You ready to go?" I go, "Yeah, coach." He goes, "Well, go in there," and I go, "Well, what do I do?" He says, "Well, look, here's if run shows you've got run support," which I never even heard of. And I'm like, "Yeah, coach, okay, I got that." He goes, "If pass shows you got the short outside zone, just, you know, drop 10 yards deep and settle in and then see what happens and react to the ball." Okay, so I go in my first snap. Bob Greasy's a quarterback, snap the football. Jim Langer, a Hall of Famer, snap the football. Bob drops back. I drop into my coverage, and here comes this kid, Stan Winfrey, comes running out. It was Stan Winfrey or Benny Malone. Comes out, and all of a sudden I see Cooch, I see Langer, and I see Larry Little.
Oh, shit.
They're throwing a little screen on me, right? So I'm kind of settling, and I didn't even know how to get in a stance. I mean, so all I remember, next thing I know, I see this, and I go, oh, I can see this coming.
I just watched these guys in my card game.
So Cooch comes up and hits me right under the chin with his helmet. I don't know if any of you have ever had that done, but
yes.
It hurts.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't, but I'm sure OJ's been.
So he hits me under the chin. The first thing it hits is the back of my head on the ground.
Oh.
And then I think for a little extra, I think he stepped on my chest. and next thing I know, I look up, and Arnsberger's like 2 inches from my nose going, "Son, in this league, you got to keep your head on a swivel." So that was my first introduction to Bob Kuchenberg. And after that, I called him Mr. Kuchenberg
for a
long time. But Bob became a very good friend of mine. And you know what? It's we lost Bob a couple months ago. And I really think part of what happened with Bob, you know, in my mind, Bob should be in the Hall of Fame. And I'm so adamant about that is that, you know, I've kind of in my mind made a commitment. I'm not going to walk into that Hall of Fame until Bob Kuchenberg's bust is in that Hall of Fame. That's how strongly I feel about the type of player he was. First of all, he's one of the best players I've ever played against. And I only played against him in practice, but maybe the toughest guy I've ever played against. You know, so Cooch, one of their Super Bowl years, he broke his wrist during the playoffs. And they said, "You're done. Can't play." He goes, no, I'm playing." And they go, "Well, you got a broken wrist. There's nothing." He goes, "Well, you need to figure out something because I'm playing." And they're going to the Super Bowl. "I'm playing. I don't care what you say." So they went in, did surgery on his wrist, went in and took all the marrow out of the bone in his wrist, whatever bone
what
it was
hell?
That he fractured. And they took a titanium shaft and stuck it in that gap where they'd taken all that marrow out of his bone, wrapped him up, and he played, ended up playing. Then when I'm playing with him, and he was an all-pro at tackle, guard, tackle in both guards, all-pro, not a pro bowler, all-pro.
The best of the best.
Played in every Dolphin. He was a part of every Dolphin Super Bowl, 5 Super Bowls Bob played in, 2 that they won, 3 that we didn't win, and played with numerous injuries. He was just that old-school, tough guy. And when I was playing with him, he broke his back. You know, you see your spine, and there's those two little knobs that stick out. They're called condyles. I learned this from, you know, what going through his, you know, as you become almost a doctor.
Right. Damn right.
Yeah, after 10 years in the NFL, you kind
of
got a degree in kinesiology, and you're a bit of a doctor, right? You can diagnose. So those things snapped and broke, and that's where all your muscles attached to. So he did that during a game. So at the end of the game, they put him in a cast from his waist to his neck. And then the next Saturday, they cut it off, and he played again on Sunday.
What the hell?
Then they put the cast on again, did it all week. 5 weeks he did that. 5 weeks he stayed in a cast from Sunday night until Saturday night. And every Sunday he played and didn't miss a snap, didn't miss a game. So one time I asked him, I said, God damn, Bob. I said, you're the toughest son of a bitch I've ever been around. You know, I said, where'd this come from? I mean, how'd you, and he's like, you know, he's a, played at Notre Dame. He's an Indiana guy, you know, Midwestern. That's what he was. And he said, well, you know, maybe it came from my family. He goes, my dad was a pretty tough guy. I go, well, what was it about your dad? It was so tough. He said, well, he had a strange career. You know, the career he was in was a little different. I go, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, he was this carny guy. Carny guy.
Carny.
He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, he'd go around, go to carnivals and county fairs and state fairs. And I said, well, what's this have to do with? He goes, well, you know, I said, well, what did he do in the carnivals? He said, well, he got shot out of a cannon.
What?
That's what he did for a living. Bob Kuchenberg's dad got shot out of a cannon. You know, they had the cannon. They would hook it up to a truck and, you know, put a little red flag coming out the back and hook it on a truck and drive around to different carnivals, town to town, and do this.
And shoot and Mr. Kuchenberg out of the
would go
cannon.
With him, and he'd get shot out of a cannon. That's what they did. And so I said, God damn, Cooch, that's the strangest thing I've ever heard, you know? So he starts telling me stories about it. He says, you know, one day we're in some podunk town or whatever, and, you know, Bob was out of college and just kind of getting started in the NFL or just getting ready to get started in the NFL. And he says, so we go in, and it's time for my dad to get shot out of the cannon. And he's over there puking, and he's sick, and he can't do it. And you know, and so someone's got to get shot out of the cannon. So Bob says, well, look, I'll go in there. And they go, no, Bob, you know, you got a football career. We can't put you down the cannon. So he goes, well, who's going to do it? And so he's got his uncle Jimmy's over there. And Jimmy goes, I'll go in the cannon. So they threw him in the outfit and Uncle Jimmy, and they put a ladder up there. He climbs up the ladder and goes in the cannon. A guy climbs up the ladder, and you got the plunger. You got to pack him in a little bit, right? So they kind of pack him in a little bit. And there's a net. There's a net on the other end for him to land in. What they didn't realize, what they forgot was that the dad weighed about probably 280.
Oh, shit.
And Uncle Jimmy weighed about 135 or 140,
oh, no.
Right? So sure enough, they pull the rope, and fucking Uncle Jimmy comes flies right over the net and hits a brick wall, right? Hits a brick wall and starts sliding down the brick wall, rips the side of his cheek off so badly that they had to take off part of his butt and attach it to his cheek to rebuild his cheek. And Jimmy was a bit of an asshole before that happened, but more so of one after that. So I go, God damn, Coots, that is the craziest story I've ever heard. He goes, well, if you think that's crazy, you should meet my brother Rudy Kuchenberg. Now, I'd met Rudy. When I met Rudy, he was a fireman in Chicago. They were Chicago guys. Rudy was a fireman in Chicago. Played semi-pro football up there, and I think he played for the Bears maybe for a year or something on the taxi squad or whatever. So I go, what the hell could Rudy do?
Right.
Your dad getting shot out of a cannon. He said, well, Rudy's got a very unique talent.
Come on.
And I said, well, what kind of talent does he have? He said, well, Rudy can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop on it. I said, what? He said, yeah, Rudy can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop on it. I go, bullshit. No way. And he goes, yeah, I'm telling you. So I've got this now. So now I've got this in my mind. So now, like, 2 or 3 years later, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. Mr. Laughs east, right? And I look over, and who's sitting next to me? Rudy Kuchenberg. So I start talking to Rudy. Like I said, I'd met him. So I was talking to him, and I start filling him with beer. I'm starting buying him beers, you know? So we're in there about an hour, and I said, Rudy, you know, your brother told me something about you that I'm not buying it. He goes, what is it? I go, he says, what is it? I said, you know, he told me that you can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop. And he goes, what about that? What?
You can't?
I go, you can? He says, yeah. I go, well, let's go. He goes, no, I'm not going to. So I keep feeding him beer. So finally he goes, let's go. So we go out in the parking lot, and we're looking. No cab. Couldn't find it. But there was a Chevy Impala, the old school Chevy Impala.
It'll do. It'll do.
And now, when we're talking about Cadillacs, we're talking back in the 60s and 70s now. You know, those big Brohams.
Oh, yeah.
Long, had the big wings in the back. And, you know, it wasn't these little short Cadillacs they got right now.
Right.
It was a lengthy car, right? So we couldn't find a Cadillac, but there was a cobalt blue, it was beautiful Impala sitting in there. So we, you know, and we knew the guy that owned the restaurant. So, but because it was parked into a parking lot, a parking space. So we went in, found the guy who owned it, and said, hey, can you back that car out a little bit, you know? And he goes, we got a little experiment here. So he says, yeah, sure. So he backs it out. So all of a sudden, Rudy's standing there, and I look over, and he unzips his pants and turns sideways and kind of, and all of a sudden, it starts coming out. It's like a fire. And he wasn't that big, you know, just so you know. Oh, it had nothing to do with size. But he starts on the side, and then he kind of arcs it up, bump, goes right over the car.
Come
doesn't
on.
Get a drop on it. When it starts to die, pulls it back in. I go, God damn, man, that is freaking crazy. So I've told this story a couple times, and no one believes me. Everyone thinks I'm making the story up. And I go, hey, I'm just telling you what.
Of all the shit you can make up.
You know, bullshit, there's no way that happened. So a few months ago, as I told you, we lost Bob. And so I was fortunate enough to MC, I don't know what you call it, for his memorial that we did in Miami Lakes, and Rudy was there. And I've told the story to Tom Garfinkel, the president and CEO of the Dolphins, and he's, you know, not bullshit. No, the story's good, but I said, Tom, there's Rudy right there. You go over and ask him. So Tom goes over and asks Rudy. He says, hey, you know, Rudy, not for nothing. And then maybe it's not the appropriate place.
Maybe this isn't right.
Right. Kim's been telling the story about, you know, you. You know, he goes, yeah. 21 feet, 3 inches, not including the splash, he says.
Right? So he's worked on his response, obviously.
So Garfinkel comes over, he did it. And he says, not only that, but Rudy says, well, if you think that's good, you should see my Uncle Bob.
Oh, come on, man.
Uncle Bob's stream is so fast, he can knock the hubcap of a car off of a car as it drives by.
What a family.
What was the family reunion at the Kuchenberg household like when these guys all got together? How do you come up with this shit?
It was very unique and very colorful.
Oh, God. So Bob was the most normal of the group.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly.
That is crazy.
I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, well, you know, let's just move on a little bit. Bo, there's no way we could have you in the tank, obviously, man, without talking about the Killer Bees, man. You know, and I remember that, like, when I'm older than most of these guys around here are, Bo. They don't remember.
Damn.
Yeah, well, I'll be 50.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
See, there you go. I knew it. So, but, you know, the Killer Bees, and when the way that caught traction, you know, and all the guys, I mean, you know, you talk about them all. I wrote them down. We got, you know, you and Brzezinski and Baumhauer.
The Blackwood Brothers, Charlie Bowser.
Yeah, all those guys,
Brzezinski,
man. How'd that catch traction, and what'd you guys take from that group that you guys had out there on that defense?
But, you know, it was we really didn't even think about it.
Right.
And it kind of, you know, it kind of came to fruition when we signed or traded for, I forget what it was, the signing or trading for Lyle Blackwood. Glenn was already on our team, and we traded for Lyle. At the time, Lyle had been in the league for a long time. He'd played for Seattle and for the Giants and the Colts and for a number of different teams. So Lyle came in, and, you know, one of the newspaper guys said, man, you guys got a lot of B names on there. And so they started calling the Killer Bees. And when I first heard, I go, that's the most ignorant, stupid, you know, I don't want nothing to do with it. And most of us didn't want anything to do with it, but they kept using it and it kept going on. And so it kind of got a life of its own. And then we got Jay Brophy came in. And so really at the time, you kind of felt bad for, like, you know, A.J. Dewey.
It didn't matter how good you were.
Gerald Small was on that team and William Judson was on that team. And look, they were as important to that team as anybody else, any of the Bees on there. But you kind of felt bad for him, although we were making some money, you didn't feel bad about it. But, you know, Lyle kind of was – when Lyle got there, they kind of put it over the top where they started calling us that. But also when Lyle got there, I think it really kind of cemented that defense together. And we went for a period there where we were either first or second in the league in defense for a good 3 or 4 years and went to the Super Bowl, you know, 2 Super Bowls and 3 AFC championship games in 4 years. And mostly on the strength of the defense.
Right.
And then as we kind of waned, you know, and then when Danny came in 83 – That was Danny came in like kind of the way I came in on the heels of the 17-0
guys. 70s, sure.
So guys were getting hurt. You know, I was pretty much beaten up and done. AJ had a couple shoulder surgeries, and so he wasn't the player he was before. And same with pretty much everyone in that line. But, you know, it was – And Juice, I'm sure you've had this experience, and I just was talking to Joe about it recently. You know, I don't know if we had so much success on that team because we were that good or – because we were just so close as a unit.
Yeah.
I mean, we were really a close football team. Certainly on defense, we were ultra close. But that whole team, offense or defense, we were a very close football team. And kind of a lot of it is, back in the day, it was almost like us against you, because Shula was such a tough coach to play for and a demanding coach to play for. You know, I asked Coach Shula one day, I said, Coach, every time you talk to me, you criticize me. I got to do this. But yeah, I said, you know, I make some good plays every now and then. Right. I go, well, you never mention anything when I make good. He goes, that's what you get paid for. I get paid to make sure you don't make the bad plays.
Right, right.
And so, and there it is. So you get it. But it was tough. You know, part of it is you kind of, as a team, you kind of, hey, you know, guys gets ripped in a meeting, and sometimes you get ripped in a meeting, it'll bring tears to a tough man's eyes.
Wrong man, right.
And so you kind of, you know, at the meetings, like, hey, don't worry, you know, we got your back. And, you know, one of the great stories, I don't know if Joe told the story when he was here. There was a game we were playing, and you know, Joe's kind of our third down tight end. He's the kind of the possession guy to go in. He wasn't going to block anybody and wasn't going to run much after
the catch.
Not a lot of yak in there, but he was going to catch the ball. So we're playing the Dallas Cowboys in the Orange Bowl. And third and seven, Joe runs a little 8-yard route, you know, a little crossing route. And I think it was Strock or someone throws him the ball, and Joe drops it, right? Just dead drop in his hands, just dead drops. Comes over to the sideline, and Coach Shula's giving him shit. God damn it, Joe. That's the only reason you're on this team, to catch that ball. Third down, that's your down. You got to make the catch. God damn it, you know, it cost us a first down. So he goes and sits down on the bench, and Coach Shula turns around, and he's still yelling at him, right? And so once Coach Shula gets done yelling at him and turns around, Nat Moore sits down next to him, and Jimmy Cephalo. Jimmy and Joe are closest of friends. Jimmy and Nat sit down next to him. And they go, hey, Joe, don't, you know, forget about him. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And so two plays later, they had a running back named Ron Springs. Ron Springs runs a little circle over. The quarterback throws the ball. I think it was Danny White or one of them, throws the ball. And Springs jumps up, ball's way out of reach, jumps up, one hands it, drags it back in for the first down. And Shula automatically turns, Joe Rocco, where's Joe? Turns around and looks at Joe, and Nat goes one way, and Jimmy goes the other way. And Joe's sitting there by himself. So Shula comes back for another round and starts beating him down again, you know.
Oh, man.
So then once he, you know, look at their guy. Their guy makes the play. You didn't. It was one. So then Shula leaves, and here comes Jimmy and Nat again to kind of console. But that's kind of the way it was. You kind of had to be, as players, you kind of had to be that guy that someone could come to and get it off your shoulders after, you know, after you'd gotten one of the Shula beatdowns, which is pretty regular occurrence back in the day.
Isn't that crazy now, though, how some coaches can't do that to some players? No. But you have to have that stature, that a Shula, yes. Belichick, Tom Landry, these guys
that have, you know, and there's not many of those guys now. And you know, the other thing, Juice, is I don't think you can really get away with that now because of free agency. You know, we had no free agency. Right. There was no movement.
You're stuck there.
There were very few trades, and there was no free agency whatsoever. So you couldn't go anywhere. So you had no choice. You know, now with free agency, you know, you see it in facilities. You know, they've got it. They're upgrading their facilities because it's like recruiting in college again.
Yep.
You're recruiting free agents in here now. And so if you got that coach and he doesn't have the gravitas of a Don Shula or a Bill Belichick or something, and this guy's trying to beat you down, you say, you know what? 2 years, I'm a free agent. I'm out of here.
Right. Even with Belichick, you see it now with certain guys.
Guys just say, no, yeah, I'm not having it.
Yeah. Right.
So there's a different mentality for the players. And I don't blame the players. It's just the way, you know, things have changed in our world. And so free agencies allowed them free movement. And so if I don't like playing here, I'm going to go somewhere else and play somewhere else. So I don't think it allows now for those coaches to be as demanding.
Right.
And the rules in the collective bargaining with how much they can practice and pads has certainly done a lot to alleviate some of that. But I just don't see because you go back and Chuck Knoll, Don Shula, Paul Brown, Tom Landry, a bunch of those guys were guys you didn't want to cross. And look, I've talked Bob Kuchenberg or Larry Little or I'm sure, you know, anybody who's played for Coach Shula, you know, penalties, he was all about playing within the rules. He would never cheat to gain an advantage, ever. Right. Even if there was a story about where some player from another team had left their playbook somewhere, and someone on our team got a hold of it and brought it to Coach Shula. He says, "Get that thing away from me. I don't even want to see it."
Right.
Wow.
Because it wasn't his thing. And so most of the guys that I played with, if you created a penalty that cost you a first down. You know, if some guy had completed, you know, OJ caught a pass for 15 yards for a first down and guy's holding, we stop a guy on, we stop a team on third downs and I jump off sides
and
they get the first down. Everyone says, you know what, I would rather go off to that sideline than our sideline. You know, because you were going to get over there and you were going to hear about it. And you were going to hear about it in no uncertain terms. And that's why when during his career, I think we were always one of the least penalized teams in the league. And that helped us.
Always.
You know, it helps you win games.
Always.
And I remember talking to Coach Gaze a couple years ago. I said they won a game in L.A. in the Coliseum.
Not one of the least penalized Rams. Teams under Coach
Gaze. No. And you know, that was a play where, you know, Ryan throws the ball in the corner to Devontae Parker with about, you know, 30 seconds left in the game. They trailed the whole game.
Sure.
Sloppy game. And so it's a big win. Everyone's excited. So after the post game, you know, go through all the platitudes. Hey, great game. You win. So finally I said, Coach, I said, you know, you had a lot of penalties. And it's becoming a trend for you, these penalties. I'm not going to worry about penalties. As soon as he said that to me, I said, yeah, I got no chance.
Yeah.
No chance.
How do you not worry about penalties? Yeah. Well, so getting back to the Killer Bees real quick. Of that group, and you mentioned all those amazing names, who was the craziest bee or bees of the group? And you can include yourself if you're on that list.
No, they would. That's a hard one to come up with because we were all kind of out there pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, we were all young, had dough in our pockets.
South Florida.
We were single at the time. You know, a lot of us were single at the time, and so it was. You're in South Florida. I was living in a hotel on Federal Highway in Fort Lauderdale, paying $75 a month. I give the maid $20 a month, and she'd wash and fold my clothes. And there was a restaurant and a bar attached to it. So yeah, it was a
that's the life.
It was. But you know, I would say the biggest instigator was probably Lyle Blackwood.
Okay,
Lyle was the instigator of almost every prank in one way or another.
Now he did say they got closer when Lyle came
they
in.
Did.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah,
right.
yeah.
And some of them were. Some of them you can talk about, some of them you can't.
Okay.
I would tell one of the great stories of all time about your boy Dan Marino. But Dan, you're a bunch of bullshit. You're making it up. He didn't pee over a Cadillac, did he? No, he didn't pee over a Cadillac.
He wasn't on the other side of it either, right?
No, no. Okay. And it was nothing dirty. It was nothing, okay. You know, there's someone allegedly stole his shoulder pads, and it was in the newspaper, and so it turned into a thing during training.
It sounds like Ace Ventura 2, maybe.
Right. Something like that.
That's what that could be.
The Timbo accent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
I would tell the story, but I would have to suffer the wrath of Dan.
Yeah,
you know
that's
what I mean?
Okay. We don't want that.
I heard you told that bullshit story on that podcast.
We kind of do. Well, he puts them on the retort.
Come back and rebut it,
you know it's not true, but you asked Stu about it.
But I have to get Stu back in the tank for a third time. So, well, if we're talking about crazy, and you just mentioned this other guy, and he continues to be one of your buddies, Joe Rose.
Yeah.
And we love seeing the work that you and Joe do together, whether it is on the audible, whether it is some of the stuff for the Dolphins. But when you guys were playing together, and he wasn't getting his ass chewed by Coach Shula, which probably there weren't a lot of opportunities that he wasn't.
Yeah.
But what was that like playing with Joe? And more importantly, just that friendship with Joe.
Well, you know what, Joe and I, it's funny because Joe and I are both Northern California guys. Joe's from Marysville. I'm from Milpitas. We were probably about, you know, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours apart. I played for San Jose State. Joe played for Cal. You know, Cal was one of our rival games. And so, you know, we kind of knew each other there, but along the lines there. And then when Joe came here, you know, Joe's a hard guy not to like. You know, he's a fun guy. He's funny. And, you know, and he's got a great personality. And he's a great athlete, you know, really a good athlete. He's a tennis, ping pong, you name it. He's competitive and he's an asshole. And as much as, you know, Joe's one of those guys that whether you play golf with him, whether you play tennis with him, whether you play ping pong with him, he aggravates you. And I'll give you, you know, in tennis, he's like, you know, just barely gets it over the net. So you run up, and as soon as you do, he lobs it over the top, and he's got it right, and he never has to run.
And he hits everything back.
And he hits everything back. He's like a wall. Same in ping pong. Does the same thing in ping pong. and so, you know, he hits that lob over, and you're running back to get it, and it's right at the baseline, and you're about to get it, and you don't. And he goes, man, you were just that close to the end. Fuck you, Joe. You know, so it's always been that kind of.
Yeah,
but I think the Northern California thing kind of bonded us together, and then you know, it was a little wild back then. You know, we were going out a lot, and you know, it was back in the days where you know you could go drink all night and come home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and go to practice the next day, and you know maybe you'd throw up on the practice field, but you'd get through it and. You go, I'm never going to do that again. And then that night, you're out again doing the same thing. So it was a different day. But Joe was always part of the good stuff. Yeah.
Did you imagine you guys? Well, you probably changed your lifestyle a little bit, but with social media the way.
Oh
it is
no!
Now,
oh,
a whole different ball
no,
game, right?
No! 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 No, 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 no.
No way.
No, no, no. No.
Oh,
no. We used to play, I think maybe when you came in, OJ, were you still playing basketball?
Yes.
With Alan Wilhelm?
Oh, yeah.
So we used to have a basketball team during the off season. We'd play 50 games during the off season.
Different teachers, firefighters, police department.
For us, it was, you know, we used it as
the extra income.
So we'd get paid $50 if the game was local. We get paid $75 if you had to go on the road. You had to travel to it.
And pay your rent for the month.
And so, you know, at the time, look, like my rookie year, I was a first round draft pick. I was making $36,000 a year my rookie year. Wow. And so, you know, you played 50 games at $50 a piece. You know, it's a decent amount of income for it. Plus, you're on the road and you're getting to go on the road and you travel with seven guys and, you know, there's always parties after. The town would always have a party afterwards or whatever. So you travel around and you're like the Globetrotters, you know, and you're playing, like you said, you play high school faculties, fire departments, and you always had that one guy that was on one of those teams, one of those high schools or fire department that thought he was a badass. And we had Ronnie Lee played with us a lot. And Ronnie came in as a tight end and ended up, I think he played for about 15 years, became an offensive tackle. And you know, Ronnie was one of those guys that, you know, when you look at Ronnie, you were scared. You know, Ronnie was this guy, you don't want him looking at you the wrong way. You know, he was one of those guys. Good guy, but, well, you know, if you lit that fuse, he was a different guy. And you didn't want to be, you want him to be on your side. So there would always be that guy that would, you know, try to undercut somebody, you know, when you're going for a layup or whatever. And so they put Ronnie in there. Ronnie, go on in here. Ronnie would go in and just beat the shit out of the guy, you know, and get him out of the game, whatever.
But the goon, huh?
The goon.
It was the goon.
But you travel around. Ronnie, you're traveling with these seven guys and play back. And we got some work. You know, you got some conditioning. So we kind of use it. And we said we use it as conditioning and stuff. But so Joe was always on those things. So it was a lot of fun.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, it was good. It was really fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's really why I started playing at our house, you know, with the basketball court.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, guys, everybody that played football thinks they can hoop. You know what I mean? All of them think they can hoop a little bit, man.
Well, you know, so, when you're in whatever college, you went to Penn State, I went to San Jose State, Joe's a Cal, you know, you'd always, you know, when the season's over, you jump in the intramurals, right?
Right away.
Now you're playing these kids at intramurals, you know. That
guys like me.
Yeah, exactly, right. You know, and you go, and roughing them up, and you know.
Oh yeah.
Well, as much as we've talked about, you know, your football career and that, Bo, you're tremendously successful now in your life, man, with media, with the restaurants. Yeah. We talked about the car dealerships, man. Tell me, what's been the secret to your success off the field now?
Yeah, you know what? I've been very fortunate. You know, OJ, timing has a lot to do with it. You know, with the restaurants, had I not run into my partner I hadn't seen him that one day that we had this conversation, that wouldn't have happened. Same thing with the car dealership deals I got involved in. But you know what? I go back to, OJ, my dad was a career Navy. He was in the Navy for 25 years. My brother was in the Navy for 25 years. My other brother was in the Air Force for 7 years. I was the only one in my family that wasn't a military. In my household, I never once heard the word college in my household growing up. It was just a given that you were going to go in the service. It was just a given. No one in my family went to college. And so the other thing is, and my dad knew nothing about sports. Couldn't care less about him. When I first started playing Pop Warner football when I was 9 years old, he said, you can play, but you don't go to practice or you don't go to games until you get your chores done. I'd get up and mow the lawn on a Sunday and then go get dressed and go play Pop Warner football. And he never cared about what I was doing sports-wise. And I remember when I was a junior in high school, my freshman year, I went out for the baseball team. So I made the team. I thought I was going to play, and I never played. So after about after about 2 or 3 weeks, I just said, you know, if I'm not going to play, I'm quitting. So I quit, and I went home. And my dad goes, well, what are you doing home early? I said, well, you know, I quit the baseball team because the guy was, he says, what? I said, I quit the baseball team. He goes, no. Get your ass back there and go ask that coach if you can be back on that team. I go, what do you care about? He goes, I don't care about it, but I don't ever want to see you quit anything. And that was like, I remember, I you know, it that's one of those, you know, we have those seminal moments in your life that stuck with you, and that stuck with me forever. And so when I got done with football, trying to figure out what I'm going to do, and I had no idea, you know, I had my first child was born. Married, you know, I had a family to support, and I didn't have much money saved because we just didn't make that much money at the time. And fortunately, my last contract, I had deferred it out, so I was getting paid by the Dolphins for like 10 years after I got done playing, you know, but it wasn't a significant amount of money, but at least it gave me a cushion so I didn't have to take the first job that I could find. So I heard there was an opening at Easy Go Golf Carts, the company that, you know, builds golf carts and sells them around, for an operations manager. I had no idea what an operations manager was, so I went and applied for the job. Glenn Blackwood told me about it, and a friend of his worked there. So I went in and did the interview, and anyway, got the job and didn't know what I was doing. Figured I'll figure it out. And when I was getting interviewed, you know, it's funny because the interview started, and for the first hour, they're talking about, hey, what's Coach Shula like? What was Danny like? You know, so it's all these footballs. They want to know all these football stories. And so when they got done, the guy says to me, he says, okay, now we're done with that. Why should I hire you? What can you do for us? What skills do you have? And I go, I really don't have any skills. I said, one thing I can do, if you get the fastest guy you've got in the building, stand him outside your door, give him a 5-yard head start, I'll catch him before he gets out of the building. I said, I can do that. I said, that's about all I can offer you right now. I said, other than that, you know, I've learned to set goals and I've learned to attain goals. I've learned how much work it takes for you to set a goal and reach the goal. And I'll set a goal to be your best employee. May take me time to get there, but at one point I'm going to be there. And so they hired me.
That's awesome.
Right? He says, well, how much money did you make in your last job? I said, well, I made $300,000. He said, well, we can't pay you that. I said, well, what will you pay me? He said, we'll pay you $36,000. I said, well, that's where I started from. I'll take it. Because I needed to learn how to work. Mm-hmm. I needed to learn how to get up in the morning, go to a job, work with people, and it allowed me to manage people a little bit. So I learned there. And then I bought, at the time, Lyle Blackwood went to work for this company, Interstate Batteries. They were looking for a distributor down here that was a distributorship available, contacted me. I looked at it and ended up doing that. And so it's kind of a long story about that. But every one of those things, I got to a point where it just was frustrating. I wasn't making any headway. And I felt like quitting, but I didn't quit. And I just kept going and kept going and kept going. So now I'm doing the golf carts and stuff. And I get a call from Jim Mandich. And I had played with the Mad Dog for 2 years. And when I was a rookie, getting on the plane, you know, there was no seat assignments. You know, the veterans took their seats and no one was sitting in that middle seat.
No.
You know, the 3-seat configuration, right? No one was sitting in that middle seat. So I'm walking down and I'm going, God, you know, and rookies are sitting down. And no, get up. You know, literally the first couple flights I flew on, we had 5 or 6 rookies standing up when the plane's taken off.
Wow.
And there were plenty of middle seats open, but the veterans
wouldn't let them
guys
sit
are
there.
Standing there holding on to the seats taking off, right? But I'm walking by and Mad Dog, because, you know, your first round, he knows you're going to make the team. So he says, here, son, sit down with me. So I sat down with Jim. So I used to sit with Jim all the time. And Jim's reading books about business and this and that. And we talked a lot. And so I got to be very good friends with Jim. So as time goes on, I'm out of football. And Jim was doing these Monday night football things at local bars. He was working for, at the time, WIOD. He would go into their stash. You know, everyone sends books. They want to get on the radio show. So they're sending whatever stuff they've got to sell. And he would just go in there and grab a box of books, gardening, but whatever it was. And they had these little barbecue bricks. And so whatever they had in there that they were, he would go to some bar and we'd give tickets to everybody. And every commercial, we'd raffle off the tickets. So he says, you know, because I get different guys to come and do this. Why don't you come in and do it? I'll give you like $200 for the night. Hey, okay, no problem. So we're doing the tickets, and all of a sudden the ticket thing got screwed up, and so it's out of control. And so I said, Jim, let me take care of this. So I jump on the mic, and I'm like, all right, okay. And I said, hey, any girl with red panties wins this. You know, girl comes up, shows, yeah, here you go. You know, so now I'm doing these stupid things, right? You know, and it went over. You know, so that was kind of my first foray into reaching out a little bit and kind of being on edge. And so
you're not pulling the red panty trick anymore on Dolphins.
No. So you know, it's a different day, a different age. Yes, right. You know what I mean? One guy came up with red panties. I wasn't sure whether I should give him the prize or not, but that's a whole different story.
Give him the prize, give him the prize.
But so what it did was kind of introduced me to being on a microphone. And then so Jim said, well, forget those other guys. So I just did it every week with him. So I was doing it every week with him. And then at the time, Joe Zagacki was with WIOD. And Joe was doing like the Dolphin pregame and postgame, and he was just starting to do the Hurricane stuff at the time. And QAM opened up business, and they became the first full sports talk radio station in Miami. So Joe jumped ship midweek, and they didn't have anyone for the pregame and postgame show. So Mad Dog says, hey, call Bo Camper and give him a shot. So they called me midweek and said, hey, can you come in and do our postgame show? And I wasn't like the host. I was just going to be one of the guys. So I went to work, and I started, you know, putting some notes down and kind of format and did all, you know, look over every game that on the schedule and kind of put some thoughts down. So I prepared myself. Mm-hmm. So I went in, did it, and they said, hey, can you come back next week? I said, yeah, I'll come back next week. So I did it. Then after that, they said, hey, we got a 6 o'clock spot open. Wow. On Saturday nights from 6 to 8. You want to do that? And I go, well, who do I do it with? They go, no, by yourself. I go, no, I've never done it.
That's said, a whole just different ball game.
So I did it, and you know, I was getting paid like $75 a show, but I did it. And I think after a few weeks, they were going to get rid of me. Something happened. Someone missed a pregame show, and I had to host the pregame show. And I did it with the program director. and it went really well. And he goes, you know, I was getting ready to fire you. He goes, but we're going to keep you. And so that kind of began my career. And it was another thing where, you know, there were times where I thought, I'm pretty shitty at this. I just kept, you know, my dad kind of ringing, don't quit, don't quit, don't quit. So
that's awesome.
So I did that, and that led to one thing led to another. So I'm doing that. And then I'm doing more radio shows. And then I was doing the post-game show by myself, 4 hours post-game by myself.
Oh, man.
When you were playing.
Man, oh, man.
And,
tough deal right
but
there.
No, but you know what? It was a yeah. training ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like Pop Warner football. You got to learn from the ground up. And so I did that. And then next thing you know, same thing happened. I get a call from the guy that was a producer at Channel 4, CBS in Miami. And they're doing that Saturday night. Everyone had that Sunday night half-hour sports wrap-up show. And they asked me if I would come in and just be the guest and, you know, comment on the games. Yeah, I'd do that. So I did that. And then they asked me back the next week and then say, hey, we do a pregame show. So then by the end of the season, they said, hey, you know, we got a spot for a regular to do the regular news, a full-time deal. You're interested? I said, yeah, you know, because I was kind of, in the meantime, I'd kind of sold the battery business, was kind of looking for something else. And so it was a perfect timing. So I did that and then just stayed at it and just kept being persistent. And I was pretty bad when I began. But again, you know, to me, it all goes back to not quitting. And I try to tell people, I said, look, just, you know, there are two things to me that, if I was to say, tell me two things that you would say are the keys to success for you. And the two things I would say are, and to me, they're very simple. So, number one, and maybe to me, the most important is be on time. I know OJ was a little late coming here today.
No, I was not. No.
But you know, the very simple thing of making the effort to be on time, you know, it's important. Because if I've had a lot of guys that I've worked with or that played for over the years that afterwards they're looking for a job or something, I say, look, I got a guy over here, go here, you know, guy call, hey, I got a guy coming, can you know, and the guy shows up 15 or 20 minutes late and they come in, hey, the guy didn't give me the job. And then I call the guy, what happened? He goes, well, the guy shows up 20 minutes late for an interview, I'm not going to hire him because he's not going to show up on time for work. So to me, that's one. And the other thing is, don't quit. No matter what it is, if you think that you can get the job done, don't quit until they tell you you can't do it anymore. And to me, those, you know, and the one just, and both of them came from my dad. My dad's my dad was at, you know, if you're on time, you're 10 minutes late. Mm-hmm. If you're 15 minutes early, you're on time. And that's, you know, I still to this day, I have a problem. I was sitting out in your parking lot for 5 minutes because I was too early. But that's been my life. So, but those two things, those two principles have served me very well over, I'm 64 years old, I'm 65 years old now, I'm retired, still doing work. But, you know, for that whole, my whole career, pre, during, and post football has all been based on those two principles, be on time and don't quit.
Well, they've served you well. They've certainly served you well. But, you know, another thing that stands out to me, Bo, is, and I remember this when I worked for the team and, you know, and the team still does this, but when young guys would come in and they'd bring veterans in or retired guys in to speak to them, I remember you specifically talking to guys about the fact that there's an opportunity here. Yep. You know, you're going to think about what you're doing while you're playing.
Yep.
But when you're done, having played for the Dolphins, you know, that gets you any interview.
Well,
that gets you, you know, then you have to be worth the shit.
Yeah.
But that, you know, to be able to maximize the fact that, yeah, and not enough guys leverage it. And well, I think that you've done that as well as anybody.
To me, playing in the National Football League, whichever team it is one of the greatest platforms to your post career. Now, there, you know, the guys are fortunate now. And OG, I think you were kind of right in the beginning of that cusp where you make enough money where if you're smart with your money, you really don't have to do too much. You know, we were in a different era where you weren't going to make enough money where you didn't have to work. But that platform of coming out of somewhere where you're recognizable to everybody, you've got name recognition, they know you, they want to be close to you because you played. And, you know, it kind of struck me when I started playing golf, and when you start playing golf, and then you get in all these celebrity tournaments. And so I'd go and play golf with these guys, and wasn't a very good golfer, but you go there and you're hooked up with four guys that you don't know. You're just meeting them right now, and I'm going to spend probably 6 hours with these guys because those tournaments are always slow.
Right.
And so you get in there and they're asking, hey, well, you know, same thing. Hey, what was Dan Marino like? What was it like playing for coach? Same thing over and over. And I used to play in a lot of tournaments. And so I'm playing, and so at one point I asked one of the guys, I said, hey, how much you guys pay to play in this tournament? Guys, we play $1,000 a man to play in this tournament. So I'm thinking to myself, geez, you pay $1,000, you must be doing pretty well. So what I started doing was I'd play golf with them and let them ask all the questions you want.
Yeah.
When they were done, then I started asking questions. Hey, what do you do? What kind of business are you in? How'd you get in that business? What was good? What did you learn? What did, you know?
Smart.
And so, you know, I'm 64 years old. I've got friends now. I've got professionals. I've got attorneys. I've got bankers. I've got, you know, different people that I've relied on over the years that I've never paid a dime to because we came friends. You know, we came friends with them, and you know, I'll go to dinner with them. And you know, relations, those relationships are, you know, post-career to me are invaluable. And so being and I would have never had those opportunities to meet those people had I not played in the National Football League for the years that I played.
Right.
So, you know, and I was very fortunate because for a while there, I didn't, just play golf. I don't want to, you know, and I finally wised up and it's served me very well. And I try to tell people, and I understand the rookies. And I say, look, the most important thing for you right now is to make this football team and do that. But it's never too early to start looking after your career. And this is a platform that if you handle it right, if you treat people properly, if you show people respect, there's going to be plenty of opportunity for you when you walk out the door. You can choose to take advantage or not. And I speak that out of my own experience. You know, it took me a while to learn it, but when I learned it, you know, I think I did a pretty good job of leveraging it.
You sure did.
And moving forward with it. You know?
Sure did.
But it opened doors, and you know, a lot of doors open up for guys. But you got to stick your foot in there and make
then
a,
you
got to
do something with it at that
and
point.
Do the right
thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. This is Ricky J. Mark. In a world where sports radio continues to shift around the whims of corporate interests, we understand that the constant, unexpected changes can be exhausting from time to time. So that's why we think you should sit back, relax, and take five. Reasons, that is. So go ahead, grab your smartphone, and subscribe to the 5 Reasons Sports Network, available on virtually every podcast platform. We're South Florida's fastest-growing on-demand sports media network, so you decide when you want to tune in. You decide when you want to listen. Because we know your life can be hectic, go ahead, fall in love with our lineup, including 5 on the Floor, 3 Yards Per Carry, The Fish Tank, Light-Skinned Opinions, and Cinco Razones, whenever you want. All you need is an internet connection. So go ahead, tune in, try us out. We're by Miami, for Miami, and spreading rapidly throughout South Florida.
Need custom t-shirts made?
What about logo giveaways for trade shows or parties?
Wizard Creations will put your logo on anything and everything, so you got to find them at wizardcreations.com.
Yeah, the lowest prices around, best services available. Wizard puts your logo on everything.
And they really do, Juice. Luke Freeman, who is the wizard at Wizard, is an amazing guy, and if you have something that needs to be branded, Luke is the guy who will get it done. He's done our Fish Tank shirts that everybody's been asking for. We've worked with him at the Jason Taylor Foundation for years. There's nobody better than Luke Freeman and Wizard Creations.
Yeah, so for all your custom merch needs, call our friends at Wizard Creations at 888-217-4084. That's 888-217-4084. Also check them out at wizardcreations.com.
And when you do that, Luke said use the code FISHTANK. He's going to give you free setup and 10% off your first order. Free setup, 10% off. You're going to save some money and get great branded product. wizardcreations.com. So we've kept you here a while, but there's one more story we have to get to before we let you go, Bo. And so you've talked about poker a lot. It's interesting. You actually kind of set us up for this one. You teed it up and the games that you have, the Friday night games with your guys and so on. But DJ Preach has a story. And actually, I was there for this and I remember it. And I don't know if you remember it, but I know you will once he gets going. Juice, you haven't heard this. And actually, there's probably about 5 people in the room in the world that know this story. But DJ
Preach, I hope
Preach
I know
has,
the story.
Well, you will.
I'm sure
you
not,
will once
I'm
you
sure
get going. So DJ, I'm going to turn it over to Preach, and it's a Kim Bo Camper poker story.
Sure. So those of you who haven't heard the Who is DJ Preach episode of The Tank, in my previous life, I helped out with travel for the Dolphins.
Right.
So I had worked for years with you, Kim, as you know, you traveled with.
Kim's like, God, I knew you looked familiar.
Media outlets.
You look a lot older than I remember, I can tell you that. Yeah. And not for nothing, but you may have put on a couple pounds. Yeah. I'm just saying.
A couple, yeah. So back then, Seth and I, we had a little poker game ourselves. So we would have a traveling poker game. Seth would host at his place. I would host at my place. And we decided, one, this is in 2000, my last year with the Dolphins. We were heading to Cincinnati. And we decided we were going to do a game on the road. Mm-hmm. So my responsibility was to secure the location. So I, you know, dealt with the hotel. So I got a conference room off to the side of the meeting space where the meetings and meals were held. Seth was responsible for the, you know, to invite the folks. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, a few of us from our regular poker crowd were there, team of the guys that traveled with us. And then there were a couple media guys.
Well, I invited Bo and I invited Joe. Yeah. And so they both showed up.
Yeah. So
surprisingly.
So we were
free liquor. We were coming.
So we were in there. We had started. It was just a nickel dime quarter game. It wasn't anything high stakes or anything. But we had started playing in the conference room, and you hadn't joined us yet. And we were in the middle of a hand, and then sure enough, you walked in during the hand, and you didn't really. You apologized for you know, being late, and you just kind of sat down, got yourself together, and we're playing out the hand, and just quietly, you just sat down at the table, didn't really say much else, and you just pulled a folded up $20 bill out of your wallet and started tapping out this white powder onto the table. And slowly, one by one, each of us around the table are noticing that you're like cutting a line of white powder on the table until ultimately the action has completely stopped and
like
everyone is
dead silence in the room,
laser focused on Kim and like, what the fuck is going on in the room right now? I mean, the team's meeting next door. Right. And finally, you look up, realizing you've got us,
right?
And just, and you had this like hugely incredulous look on your face. You're like, what, you guys don't mind, do you? and you're like, and you know,
even Joe like, was kind of like, oh shit.
And then you immediately let us off the hook that it was some artificial.
He pulls out packets of sugar or whatever.
I'm gonna tell you where that idea came from, and I know we're running out of time here, so. But I'll tell you where that came from. My first roommate with the Dolphins was this guy, Steve Toll. And Steve was a great linebacker in Kansas, great linebacker for the Dolphins.
Had all the tackle records,
Zach. Well, no, he still owns.
Well, still does, yeah.
He holds the record in the National Football League for the most tackles in a season. I think it's 250, 260 or something
crazy.
Like that. In a 14-game season. Still holds a record, right? And he was a crazy – I mean, he was out there. And you could lead me in about 20 stories. But so – along that line. So, you know, I was playing in that era where there was a lot of changes going on. And the first change was they were first allow women into the locker rooms for post game. I think it was, I don't know, Christine Brennan or one of the girls that was a kind of a pioneer in females in sports writing. I think about the New England area. She kind of said, hey, look, it's not fair that my counterparts can go in there and get quotes and I can't go in there. And
right.
So the league said, hey, you know what? We're going to have an open door policy. You can go in as long as you're working. So, and Coach Shula, stickler for the rules. So we have a meeting. So he stands up and begins, hey, look, you know, the league is determined that, you know, women are going to be allowed in the locker room to do their job. I don't know how I feel about it, but if the league says that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to do. So here's the procedure. Every one of you is going to be given a terry cloth robe. It'll be hanging in on your hook in the Orange Bowl. And we didn't have lockers. We had hooks there. And he says, so here's the deal. You come in. After the game, you take your uniform on, you put your robe on. You go into the shower, you take a shower, you soap yourself up, you wash yourself.
I mean, he's
detail guy. Wipe yourself off, put your robe back on, go back to your hook, and then put your underwear, and then you could take your robe off. And that's it. So, okay. So Sarah goes, okay, fine.
Troy Drayton would have struggled with this procedure.
Yeah, so Steve being Steve, goes in, comes in the locker room, sees his terry cloth robe, goes into the training room and gets a pair of scissors.
Oh, no.
Cuts the robe off right below where the belt where the sash goes, right at the waistline. And so you know, we come in after the game, we won the game fortunately. He puts this thing on and it's like one of those old tuxedos, you know, that just comes about to the waist, and he's got it tied up with a bow, and down below there's nothing, you know, he's exposed. Oh, and now the doors are open and they're coming in. And there's like two women coming in.
Oh, God.
As soon as the women come in, he stands up in the middle and stands up on one of the benches and goes, Coach, is this how we're supposed to wear our robe? So that was one. So then, but going to the card game, so later on that year, you know, drugs were starting to become a problem back in the day. Mm. You know, there was no steroid policy in the league, and there was no drug policy in the league, and especially being down in Miami where cocaine was just rampant. I mean, in the 70s, early mid 70s, it was crazy down here. You know, the Mario Boat, it was all during that whole era. So they have, Coach Shula says, okay, tomorrow, you know, we got Charlie Jackson, I think. I don't know if you remember Charlie. Charlie was like the head of security for the National Football League. He traveled around to every team to talk about drug usage and, you know, watch who you give your tickets to, because we check those tickets and see who's sitting there. You know, so if you, you know, because they, you know, because right.
You don't want to be associated
kind of epidemic with epidemic at that point. So he says, well, Charlie Jackson's going to come in tomorrow and he's going to talk to the team about this. And everyone knew it was cocaine, right? And so we come in and sit down, and Steve's got a little something over on the side. And no one knows. And so now Coach Shula goes, now he introduces Charlie Jackson. So Steve leans over. He had a little thing of Vaseline, and he rubs it on his nose.
Oh, fuck.
And he had baby powder. He takes a baby powder, and he sticks it on the Vaseline. So he's got all this white stuff below his nose. And this guy, Charlie Jackson, goes, yeah, I like the introduce. I'm Charlie. And Steve stands up and goes, hey, Charlie, what are we going to talk about today? What are we going to talk? And he's got this white shit. So that's the root. That's the root of the.
Well, it was classic, man. He walked in, you know, and we're all lower level guys, Juice. It's not like this is we're sitting here is. It's not Brian Wiedemeyer and Eddie Jones who he's playing with, and they wouldn't. You probably wouldn't have pulled off that gig with those. So we're all lower level guys, and really probably don't want anybody to even know we're playing cards,
right.
Let alone the fact, you know, and my dumbass invites high profile media members, and Bo sits in, and Sean's right. Well, like we're playing, and we're dealing out the cards, and. He's over there cutting lines, and just we all just stop, and he doesn't even act like he sees us.
No, it's funny. None of you asked me, how did you know how to do that?
Yeah. I didn't want to know, man. I was just like, holy fuck, what is happening here? But the funny Joe, who has told us the way he liked to run, you know, on this show. Yeah. Joe sat there, and he's
he was shocked.
I can't believe Bo's doing this shit right now. And when he pulled out all the torn with the flour or the sugar or whatever it was, man, that was.
But you know
classic.
What? That kind of goes back to me and Juice. That's to me one of the great things about sports is not you know the pranks and stuff, but it's just
the cocaine.
You know, no. Just the fact that you're around people that you know so well,
right?
That you feel free to really do. And yep. I always, you know, Mad Dog told me one time, and I'll never forget. And I've never forgot it. He says, you know, if you're going to do radio, if you're going to be on whenever you're on the microphone. Make sure that when you get off the microphone, you've said something where people say, I can't believe he said that.
Right.
You know?
That's great advice.
And I try to tell people, I said, people, they go, hey, I want to do it. I said, well, you know what? If you're going to be on the radio, say something. You got to say something. Because how many people have you been on with the radio where you go, hey, yeah, tell us about, you know, what it was like. Yeah, it was really fun. I had a lot of good time.
Right.
It was good. It was great.
You get nothing.
And you get nothing, you know? So, you know, that kind of, you know, that's another one of those, you know, but being with guys that you're so close, you can push that. You can push that envelope pretty far.
You push it, man.
I've always kind of like always like to live on the on the outside of that envelope.
Well, it meant a lot to us. I mean, first of all, it was an unbelievable gag because it's just like I thought I was done. I thought I was fired, and you know, we're playing cards on the road and doing blow with our broadcasters. You know, so I was really a little intimidated by that. But I think speaking for Preach and some of us, you know, the guys who were. You know, we were working our tails off, but our lower level guys to have a guy like you and Joe to come in there and feel that comfortable with us that we felt awesome. Like we were one of the boys. So that was really awesome.
Good.
But I'm looking at the clock, and I know you got 10 other jobs you probably got to get to before the day's over. It means a lot that you came in. We did hold out until season two, but that's because we wanted season two to mean something.
I got you.
And it was great to have you here, man.
Well, I appreciate it. And Seth, you know, we've been friends for a long time. And OJ, one of my favorite players of all time, whether we're in the Dolphin uniform, one of the toughest guy out there. And we've been, you know, again. Like my relationship with, you know, with the guys that played before me, I've been able to build a relationship with guys like
Juice
me
a lot and of opportunities,
Jeff
man.
Cross really and all stuff. Those guys TV, that played after. And I think one of the things I'm really fortunate about, and Juice, I'm probably speak for you too, that, you know, being a part of this Dolphin organization, you know, some guys have had different experiences, but the one thing is that if you've been a part of that organization, I really feel like you're part of a family.
Absolutely.
And the family sticks together and supports each other. And for that, I'm very pleased.
Yeah, like Bo said, you know, think about it. You know, Dick Anderson back in the early 70s through Bo, through the 80s with Danny and all those guys through. Even now, you know, they do such a great job of keeping us all together. And we spend a lot of time together.
You know, I every now and then I try to put the numbers together. So I got here in 1976. So what is that to now? How many years is that? 40?
Shit, that's a math
43,
question, Bo.
45? 45. 40, let's go 43.
I'll cut out the 46. Pauses, guys.
We'll go 43.
43 years. And when I came here in 1976, the team had only been around for 10 years.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So, I mean, I feel fortunate to have been part of, you know, the history of this franchise for, you know, the majority of time that it's been in existence. And so, for a guy from, you know, from my little hometown that didn't get recruited to college, that kind of, you know, paid my way, you know, when I got my bonus, I took part of my bonus to pay my student loans because I paid my way to school for my first 2 years.
Wow.
And so for a guy to go from that to being a part of an organization like the Dolphins for that long, you know, the day they bury me in the grave, it will have been a fully lived life, and a lot of it based on my experiences with this franchise.
That's really beautiful. Hopefully that's not anytime soon, Bo.
Hopefully not, but you never know these days, you know.
It was awesome having you here, man.
No, it's been my pleasure.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Bo.
Always.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, Dolphins, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Fans with attitude, okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Fish tank. Go get your aqua orange, yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth, time to dive up in that fish tank. Dolphins with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.